folks. Gonna lock up the Oregon Fayul injection hotline because it's that time on a Thursday when we cue it up and get our view from the north. Ow! Keep up with what he's doing. Visit the NBC Sports Northwest website. You can get your Seahawks fix and more. Follow along on Twitter. The handle is at Aaron J. Ventress. Mr. Ventress, happy football season. How are things?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
You're not going to believe this. I'm on my Bluetooth earpiece that went to the washer and the dryer and still works.
Well, I'm really happy you decided to test it out on my live radio show. Unbelievable. In recent years, this week meant that, you know, you were all in for college football, but you got kind of a new capacity. You got a little Ducks, a little Seahawks. So are you more easing into football season as opposed to diving in head first?
Oh, I'm diving in head first. Trying to learn a Seahawks roster that, you know, I mean, honestly, I know who most of the good players are, but most of the good players are gone.
Yeah, I saw that you were tweeting about trying to figure out this roster, but I've got to ask you one thing completely unrelated to anything, because I know in the past, and I first met you during the 08 season, and we've talked about our love for Richard Pryor, his live and concert stand-up routine, and I texted you earlier, 35 years ago, Eddie Murphy Delirious on HBO for the first time. Were you big on that?
Oh my God, are you kidding me?
Okay, I thought so.
I grew up a huge SNL kid. I remember watching SNL when I was 7 or 8. I was living about my parents, right?
Right.
I had some pretty wacky parents, but of course that transitioned into the early 80s with Eddie Murphy. So I was a big Eddie Murphy fan. In 8th grade, me and my buddy, we had his first album. We used to listen to it all the time. And then Delirious came out in 83. And I remember I watched Delirious at my grandmother's house. With one of my uncles and my grandmother. I was 15. I was laughing. My grandma was laughing. She knew of Eddie Murphy from his movie. She didn't really watch SNL, but she watched the early movies he was in, 48 Hours, Trading Places, et cetera.
Right.
And actually, my uncle, Roger, has been Eddie Murphy's stand-in on movies for like the last 10 years.
That's awesome.
So every movie Eddie Murphy does, my uncle does the stand-in. But you've seen Nutty Professor, right?
Yeah.
So in Nutty Professor, whenever Eddie Murphy's one of the clumps talking to another clump, that clump is my uncle. And that's it. But even despite this, I've never gone to the movie set to meet Eddie Murphy.
Oh, wow. Well, in my family, it's a rule. If it's time for dessert and you're getting, you know what, you have to yell, ice cream!
But no, Delirious was just, for anyone out there who's too young to know about it or hasn't watched in a long time, go watch it. It's one of the greatest, most impactful stand-up routines ever. Like, it was all anyone was talking about. And I recorded it on a little 8-track cassette so I could listen to it when I go to school. I memorize that thing. Like, if you played any part of it right now, I could probably nail it at 90%. That's how big that was in my childhood.
No, me too. Just awesome. All right. Now we can get on to football since we covered what's really important. So the news this week, I guess, from the NFL, very quarterback-centric. You know, the Packers gave Rodgers Fort Knox. And then you wrote about today, they dealt his backup to the Seahawks. And you asked the question, 6th-round pick, is this worth the move? What's your evaluation with this?
I like it. You know, I think they had to do something. I don't believe Austin Davis is a guy that you want to turn to try and win you a game. He's not awful, but he's not very dynamic. He sort of is what he is. And I think to get a guy that still has maybe some upside to him, that's young and very mobile, which Austin Davis is not, I think adds some value because you can do a lot of similar things you do with Russell Wilson with Huntley. He's not going to be as good, obviously, but at least you can pretty much keep the same plays in terms of QB mobility. And plus, you know, he's still young. You know, he got thrown to the Wolves last year when Aaron Rodgers got injured. He didn't perform all that well, but, you know, this is a young kid that maybe they could try and develop. My only, you know, question was, look, man, if a team says they're going to go with Deshaun Kizer and give you the guy he beat out, do you want that guy?
I didn't think of that angle.
But on the other hand, Kizer was just a rookie last year, had to start for a horrible team, threw 11 touchdowns, I think 22 picks, but was that all on him? He was a second-round pick. So Green Bay perspective, he's pretty much got a second-round talent, allegedly, from Cleveland for next to nothing. That allows you to move Hundley for a sixth-round pick. So you're choosing to go with Kizer and a sixth-round pick over Hundley. Whereas if you're Green Bay, you're choosing to give up that sixth-round pick and basically cut Davis in order to go with Hundley. I think it's a win-win.
Talking football there in Fentress, NBC Sports Northwest. And you also wrote about the extension for Tyler Lockett, who's been a pretty good number two receiver, and he's really fun return guy. So they also brought in Brandon Marshall, and I know they've got Doug Baldwin. What's the buzz about this receiving core for Russell Wilson?
They feel pretty good about it. You know, they lost Jimmy Graham, which, you know, in the red zone is going to hurt, which is a big target. He's had a huge year with Green Bay, probably. But they got some good blocking tight ends, including Ed Dixon from Oregon. And I think Brandon Marshall can serve as that red zone big body threat. But Lockett, you know, he's a speedy, vertical guy who really looked good as a rookie. His rookie year, especially the second half of the season, he and Wilson were killing it. Really looked like he was going to be a superstar. And in 2016, he broke two bones in his leg, and then that kind of hindered him a little bit last year, and now he's fully healthy. They feel like he's going to take a big jump. So if Baldwin's one and either Marshall's or Lockett's two, the other one's three, and then you've got Jaren Brown, who's a nice – I mean, if he's your fourth receiver, you're doing pretty well. They really love this David Moore kid, number 83. He's got a really good preseason, a 5-6 returner, return kicks or punts, very athletic. Last year didn't do anything as a rookie, but this year they feel like he's going to make some moves, at least be a serviceable backup.
Now, that team intrigues me. Let's sneak over to Oregon. You wrote about that depth chart. You mentioned it's busy. It seems that that Orr guy shows up a lot. But from what you heard from the coaches and what you might deduce, so do you make of this that they're deep, they're unsettled, or to be determined?
Well, that's the thing. Like, on one hand, you can say, you know, well, they're all so great they couldn't pick a number two, and everyone's close to Tony as well, and oh my God, they're going to be amazing. On the other hand, you say, well, wait a minute, maybe this is a situation because, well, okay, Tony's listed as a starter, but even the way Cristobal talked about it, he didn't say it like Tony has leaps and bounds moved ahead of everybody. They said he deserved be the guy going out there first. And then you have all these other guys. Is it just basically a hodgepodge? You know, is it just like, oh, just throw someone up there and see who's hot? And if that's the case, that's a little dangerous because everything's always fine when you're just gashing people. When the line is destroying and the offense is rolling, the pace is killing people, you just throw any back in there and they're going to make big plays. But they're going to have four or five games this year, because I don't think Oregon's going to be dominant. They're going to have four or five games this year where it's going to be close. In the third and fourth quarter, and who's going to be your guy? If you're going to be run heavy, which Oregon has always been, even with a good quarterback, you're still going to run the ball a lot. You got to have a guy that you can trust. You can trust to get, when there's only two, he gets you the two. He doesn't try and bounce outside and lose four. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He can grind out. And sometimes he turns 2-5. He turns 5-8. He turns 8-16. You need that guy you can rely on. Oregon's always had that guy. Right?
Yeah.
Freeman, even Byron Marshall that one year when he started. Barner, LaMichael, Jeremiah, Stewart, we can go on through the years. And right now it seems like they don't know if they have that dude, and that could be a problem in close games.
All right, then lastly, with Texas A&M backing out, we know, in essence, Oregon wound up with a candy-ass non-conference schedule. But
he said candy.
I'm from Jersey. I get away with this stuff. So, you know, barring a fix, they're going to be 3-0 when Stanford gets here. But in a season like this, third coach 3 years, they're looking to get back into the contending conversation. Isn't it kind of a break that they can pretty much use these games to tune up and get maybe some important things answered before Stanford and Pac-12 play?
I think most definitely. I think the only thing that's going to hurt, the only way this is going to hurt them is if somehow they went 11-1, got to the Pac-12 title game and won it, and they're sitting there 12-1, going, hey, look at us, and the rest of the country goes, man, you don't beat nobody. Then that could hurt you come playoff decision time if another, if two other champions from other conferences, you know, have better resumes. Other than that, no, I agree 100%, because one, Crystal Ball and all those guys, you know, this is going to be their first time as a staff together with Crystal Ball being the head guy, which, you know, it's 50-50 on whether that matters, because at least most of the staff was together last year under Taggart. But I think given what happened in the Boise State game, I think it matters a little bit. They can get their bearings and get rolling as a coaching staff. And they have a lot of young talent. They're riding two pretty good recruiting classes that they feel really high about. And because of the new redshirt rule, you're going to have a chance to play a lot of guys.
Yeah.
And still preserve their redshirt. And so for this roster with a lot of young talent, with a coaching staff, with a new head coach, to have three games where you know, okay, we got to do our job. We can't go out there and just, well, no, they can just go out there and just roll off the ball. But we think, you never know, maybe Blue and Green, they have a new quarterback they put in last year. I can't remember his name. He's pretty good. But anyway.
Daigie.
You pretty much, yeah. So you pretty much, let's put it this way. If you don't win each of these games by at least 30, there's bigger issues. If you know going in, we should roll. This gives you a lot of opportunities to really look at a lot of guys and fine-tune a lot of things without the pressure of, oh, my God, we got to beat Michigan State, or we got to beat the Georgia, or what have you.
No, I'm with you on that one. Folks, he is Aaron J. Fentress. Ready or not, kind of here we come. See what he's up to on Twitter, at Aaron J. Fentress, NBC Sports Northwest on the web. Hey, good stuff as always. Glad the Bluetooth survived, and we'll catch up soon.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Take it easy.